Good. Okay, we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. Miss Alyssa, do you mind reading the mission statement for us?
The City of Fairbanks recognizes that our community is a diverse one, with a wide variety of ethnic backgrounds, cultures, beliefs, and orientations, and recognize this diversity as an asset and resource for our community. The advice and recommendations, or sorry, the establishment of the Fairbanks Diversity Council can provide the City Council and the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly with advice and recommendations to promote equal opportunity for all members of the public.
Thank you. Miss Mary Jo, will you read the land acknowledgement, please?
We respectfully acknowledge the Dena people upon whose traditional lands we reside. We honor the Dena who have been the stewards of interior lands and waters for centuries, the elders who lived here before, the Dena people of today and future generations to come. We also recognize that Alaskan Native people would traditionally gather here and harvest Native foods.
Thank you. We'll move on to roll call. Let's see. Erica Dillard. Alyssa Quintin.
Quentin, present.
Quentin, sorry. Rachel DeTemple, here. Terry Norman, Dorothy Shockley,
here.
Lainey Appel,
present.
Mary Jo Skaggs,
here.
Karen Blackburn, here. Herb Butler,
here.
And Deidre Hamilton. We'll move on to approval of the agenda. Can I get an approval of first and second on the floor? Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll move on to approval of the previous minutes from our meeting on June 9th. Motion on the floor.
Was there a motion? I didn't. Did you hear a motion?
I'm still waiting. I think people are reading.
Motion to approve. Which one do you want?
She motioned. Can you second?
Second.
Okay. Lainey second. Okay. Okay. Now we're at citizen comments. I see none. We do have guest speaker. The Fairbanks Queer Collective, so you now have the floor.
All right, well, thank you all so much for making time to connect with us and for us to share a little bit about the work. I need to go turn off the lights. In 1 second, we have a presentation. All right, so we are the Fairbanks Queer Collective. We are a local group that we started a few years ago here in Fairbanks, creating safe spaces for queer people to gather, especially in when we lack a lot of what we call queer infrastructure. There's not a lot of places that are designated as safe for queer people, and we're just people who are trying to create those safe spaces for our community. My name is Nikan Koa. My pronouns are he and they, and I'm one of the co-founders, and I'll let Wiho'o introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Wiho'o.
My pronouns are they, she, and I'm the director and co-founder of Fairbanks Queer Collective.
Yes. So the way that the Queer Collective started, we're both already doing community organizing work. And as many of us here who are community organizers, we always start organizing as a need, trying to fill a need in our community. And we started creating these spaces, especially around LGBTQ Pride Month. And we recognized that queer people exist outside of June. So we are trying to build something that was queer-led and rooted in our community and specific needs of the community here in Alaska. Fairbanks is a very unique place, and with that comes just unique challenges that impact the queer community. When I mentioned earlier that we talk about queer infrastructure as something that is needed, and it's not that we need a LGBTQ bar or anything like that, but creating these third spaces where queer people can gather in a way that is safe, that they don't need to feel threatened or feel like they have to convince or explain who they are, and they can just come as they are. So the Fairbanks Queer Collective, we're here to provide those safe spaces, those spaces that are free of violence, so that our community can thrive rather than just survive. Especially in the recent years, the political climate that we face, not just nationally, but at the state level, there is a very direct attacks to our community. So it's very important for us to be able to meet those needs of of the queer community who are constantly under attack for one reason or another. So I want to lead with, in the creation of these spaces, what our values are. We value inclusion and accessibility, also self-determination. We are consent first in every way. We also recognize that the queer people are not a monolith, or none of us are a monolith. We carry a lot of identities and a lot of peoples with us, and recognize that the struggles are also intersectional. We also value community and being community-led, focus on wellness, on joy, on justice and advocacy, and also on decolonization and collective liberation. We recognize that just because other groups that are marginalized identities in Fairbanks or elsewhere, even if they're not explicitly LGBTQ, we recognize that our liberations are tied together. So that's a little bit about what guides our work and our values. So now we kind of want to show you a little bit about what our current efforts are to create these safe spaces. In 2024, we were very fortunate enough with the support of Native Movement and with the Pride Foundation to create or open the Lavender Lounge, which is it's a low barrier drop-in community space that has weekly programming. It is also the first explicitly LGBTQ resource center in Interior Alaska and currently the only explicitly LGBTQ resource center in the state. And we're just a few blocks away. Our address is 526 Gaffney Road as part of the Dena Movement Commons, where we share with other community organizations who do similar work for different communities. We also have a mutual aid network where it's a hub for peer-to-peer support, where the community can show up and either offer services or skills or resources to other community members who need it, especially when the queer community is overrepresented in housing in housing insecurity, food insecurity, all these things. We also focus on wellness and care, so we have support groups and talking circles. We also help with resource navigation and our suicide prevention trained to provide these supports. And we also have a Fairbanks Queer Youth Collective, where we have, as part of this, we host weekly youth hangouts in our space as a safe space for youth to come after school and just hang out, have those resources and create community in that way, and provide mentorship and leadership opportunities for them. And we're probably most known for our Pride events. We do a Pride summer. We had a beautiful Pride Fest in June over at Esther Park. And every year it gets more and more popular and more well-attended. And it's all joyful work that with and a lot of work, as you all know, with volunteers and we host leadership. And here's some pictures. I don't know if you can see them really well from the Lavender Lounge. It is quite literally lavender. And in here, we do arts and crafts. There's game nights. As I mentioned earlier, we help with resource navigation. It's also the youth hangout spot. We also host those social and wellness gatherings. We'll have educational presentations, especially around resource navigation. We'll have legal support for the queer community, especially around legal name changes and things like that, all led by volunteer attorneys. We also have a community pantry where we try to support with food insecurity. It's all free and all led through donations. We have a pretty popular free queer closet. Anybody can come in. It's all free clothing that we have volunteers sort through. And it really helps folks get access to gender-affirming clothing that would otherwise be prohibitive due to cost. And we also help other local support groups. Like I said, we don't have a lot of queer infrastructure, so having the opportunity for groups like Gender Pack to come and just host a space for their network. We also, here's some other pictures here. That picture on the top left was from our
history event.
Yeah, a queer history event where we had LGBTQ elders come and just share stories with the community. We also, we shared this, as I mentioned earlier, we shared this space with other groups, but we do have conference rooms for meetings. There's a picture of our food pantry and our queer closet and of one of our memorial walls in there for one of our community leaders. And yeah, these are a couple of our actual programming calendars. So as you all can see, it's pretty packed. And there's a lot that happens not just in the lounge, but in the community that we host. We also have some recurring programming, but we also make room for workshops and special events. One big part, or a big part of what we've been building through FQC is not just the programming, but also stronger networks of community care. So at this point, I'll hand it over to WeHo, who does day-to-day programming and management of all of this amazing work.
Thank you. I'm happy to pull our attention to a few of our programs. Our mutual aid network was created in memory of our dear friend Kathy Otterston to honor their fierce dedication to community and keep their memory alive. And when we talk about mutual aid, we're talking about a network of care and support, not just financial assistance. And that can look like peer support and resource navigation, transportation, skill sharing and community meals, community pantry and the free closet, the legal cafe, and practical support like body doubling or just, having an accountability buddy. And the goal is to recognize that people have different needs, but they also have different things they can contribute, and mutual aid gives us a way to connect all those things. And we're really big on the reciprocity of it all. It's a really important part of how we think about mutual aid. You might need support with something today and be in a position to help with something else tomorrow. People can sign up to offer support however they're able to, and when a need comes up, we'll put out a call in the mutual aid network, and if you can answer it, then answer it. And then when you're in need of support, then you can do that same process as well. And we want to really build a culture where asking for help and offering help are both normal parts of being in community. One way we put reciprocity into practice is through community skill shares. This was a really great example. This was a basic car maintenance workshop where community members could learn practical skills that can help them be more independent and save money. So it's just the basics on like car maintenance, like changing filters, changing your oil and things like that, that can really like improve the longevity of your vehicle. And it was really great. It was 100% volunteer led and free. It was just a whole afternoon of care, and we did it right in our parking lot. It was actually a lot of fun, and I learned some things, and it's not as daunting as I thought it would be. So it was actually pretty great. And here's a few examples of ways we created opportunities for people to connect around specific needs. Like we hosted a housing mixer that we're hoping to do again this coming month. That was a really good opportunity for people to get together to try to find a roommate or find creative solutions to address like the housing issues. And the community potlucks to create low barrier opportunities to share food and build relationships. And then of course our legal cafe, just some basic legal support and legal advice that can, you know, otherwise be intimidating or difficult to access. And mutual aid can be meeting an immediate need, but it can also be helping people build the connections and knowledge to make navigating future challenges easier. This is also why we see so much of this work as prevention work. These are protective factors that can help build LGBTQ resiliency. Things like social support, positive role models for youth, access to safe and affirming spaces, opportunities for leadership, support navigating hardships, safe and sober opportunities for wellness and collection. A lot of what you've seen so far might seem very different from one another, but they're often building the same underlying things: connection and support, belonging and resiliency for the queer community. And one place where we've been especially intentional about building those protective factors is our work with queer youth. Sorry. What have I done?
I don't know what this is. just hit the minus.
God, help me. Sorry about that. Oh, gosh. So I want to talk about our Fairbanks Queer Youth Collective, which is like the youth version of what we do. And the Fairbanks Queer Youth Collective really grew out of Camp Queer, which is a camp that we used to host annually, but we took a little break for a little bit while we were trying to build up our organization. But yeah, the youth who participated wanted opportunities to stay connected and use their voice to make positive changes in the community. And instead of coming to them with a predetermined list of priorities, we started by creating a space for them to talk about what they were experiencing and what they wanted to change. So after camp, the youth came together to start figuring out what they wanted the youth collective to actually focus on. And we used like a brainstorming process to let everyone contribute individually at first, and then we came together as a group to talk about those ideas. And the first question was pretty straightforward. It was, what challenges are queer youth facing in Interior Alaska? And we gave everyone time to write down their answers before talking about them together. And some of the things that the youth identified were dead naming, lack of LGBTQ education and representation in schools, not having safe spaces, bullying, mocking, being disowned, unhealthy relationships, lack of acceptance from peers and family, and lack of mental health support. These became the starting point for figuring out what the youth collective could realistically do to make things better. And then the next question that we gave them was, what are some ways that we can address these issues? And again, they came up with some great ideas, like using their voice to create change, talk to school administration, educating parents about the LGBTQ community, teacher education around bullying prevention, educating their peers, creating anonymous ways for students to give feedback,
And yeah, there was some really strong interest in education and advocacy, especially within the schools. But we also wanted to ask something that wasn't just focused on problems or solutions. So we asked, what do you need to feel safe, valued, and respected? Their questions were really simple, but I think incredibly important and really highlight how easy it is to make a young queer person feel valued. They identified a community of people who feel safe, someone who cares, LGBTQ places to hang out, inclusion, people using their correct names and pronouns, someone acknowledging that they exist. And at the end of the day, youth were telling us that they just want to feel safe and included and validated and cared for. Like, these are some very basic things, and that's all they needed, but that is something that they felt that they were lacking in their life. And we took everything from those conversations and used it alongside the youth to develop this focus for the youth collective. And some of those things are peer-to-peer education, strengthening the local GSA network, events centered around queer youth joy and wellness, leadership training and opportunities, community education, suicide prevention and anti-bullying awareness, and community service projects. What's important is that these priorities came out of what youth had already identified as challenges they were experiencing. The changes they wanted to see and the things they needed to feel supported. One of those priorities is creating opportunities for youth to actually practice leadership, not just learn about it. These photos are from Lead On, a statewide youth leadership conference our youth attend every year in the fall. They were able to build skills around peer education, community service, suicide prevention, substance use prevention, and bullying prevention, while also getting opportunities to represent their own community and perspectives, and also connect with youth from all over Alaska, because I think the last time they did it, there was like youth from 30 different communities, and a lot of them are like rural places, so they got to build solidarity across Alaska with other youth who are experiencing a lot of the same things and find solutions together. Another priority was creating queer joy and wellness. And this is a really cute example. They did an LGBT and wellness party. It was really fun. There was like DIY self-care stations where they can make like scrubs and candles and sensory bottles and friendship bracelets, along with like they could try yoga or an embodied movement workshop. And we got some really great positive feedback around that, even from like some of the school counselors. Like a week later, they came back and they were like, hey, we heard this was like a really great opportunity that our students went to over the weekend. And it's really good to hear those kinds of positive feedback. Hollow Queer is another great annual event that the teens like to do every year. It's just like a fun, joyous opportunity for them to get together and just exist in a safe, sober setting. And then a really great project that they started last year was the Aurora Queers Youth Zine. And it gave the youth another way to use their voice through art, writing, and creative expression. They did 100% of the work for the zines, and they're absolutely incredible. They published 4 over the past year. They're around like 10 to 20 pages each, and they have everything from like educational pieces to poetry and artwork, and it's absolutely beautiful. And the other really great thing is that the youth actually sat down with me and we wrote it together. So, we showed them some like grant writing skills, and we got it. So they felt really good about that, and like, that was a really big accomplishment for them. Another major focus has been strengthening support for LGBTQ students within the schools. So we co-created this youth support guide. It's in one of the photos on the bottom left. But yeah, we created this little youth support guide that goes along with this really great presentation that the West Valley GSA put together, called Breaking Barriers, Addressing LGBTQ Topics in Schools. But yeah, so we try to like uplift the GSAs in however we can. We know there's like a lot of strict rules around like what teachers can do to help and students in school, but we don't necessarily have to adhere to them. So we try to mentor them in whatever way and give them the tools that they need to like create the GSAs if they want to. And we even help by like bringing cupcakes to the first meeting or doing like little membership drives or, you know, just helping in whatever way that they need. We'll even talk to schools for them if they need. And alongside all the advocacy and education work, we keep coming back to, you know, doing awesome opportunities for like queer youth, joy and wellness. Yeah, these are some really great examples of some flyers from events that we did. Like we did a lock-in, and we try to do that annually during Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. But we try to keep it really lighthearted and not just do a bunch of educational work. Lots of really great opportunities.
So as y'all can see, there's a lot of work that happens, and it's all very intentional. So just really appreciating WeHo's leadership, especially focusing on our youth. We are trying to build those safe spaces that we wish we had when we were in our youth. Last year during our Lavender Gala, which is our annual fundraiser, one of our youths had the opportunity to share their experiences and how transformative having these connections with not just like having adult mentors who know what they go through, but also with peers who they can navigate these challenges together. We also spend a lot of time thinking about what it will take to sustain this work, what could be possible as we continue to grow. As you all know, or may not know, there are a lot of challenges when it comes to providing LGBTQ support, not just in the state of Alaska, but across the nation. So one of the biggest challenges that we face is funding and philanthropy, especially in the current political climate, where there is so many attacks at the policy level to LGBTQ identities. Philanthropy follows suit, and it's becoming increasingly hard when a lot of the focus is being pulled into what are considered like hub communities, New York, Philadelphia, Seattle, and not so much to what they consider rural, which Fairbanks very well falls into that. Alaska as a whole falls into that. Coming from funding also capacity, you know, right now we have one staff member who supports that, and we are mostly volunteer-led. So that staff member is WeHo, who does the grant writing, but also the peer support, the volunteer coordination, the fundraising, the meeting with youth. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. So we're really fortunate to have the support of the community and have support of these amazing volunteers. And you know, they have to have their lives and jobs and families. And sometimes these volunteers don't feel safe to engage due to the political climate, which is another barrier. With the challenges in capacity overall, we are still the only LGBTQ resource center in the interior and in Alaska currently, with the closure of Identity in Anchorage. So the demand for our support grows. We currently focus on the interior, mostly in Fairbanks, North Pole areas, but we still get support requests from Bethel or from Anchorage or from all other communities who we are literally the closest thing that they have, and they are 300 miles away. And so there's an increasing need. As I mentioned earlier, the queer community is disproportionately represented in housing insecurity, in food insecurity, in violence, in homicide, and we also recognize that there are other groups that experience these things as well, and that we're not all separate, you know. But overall, there is less general LGBTQ resource support that's being available to the state. Philanthropy as a whole has contracted. This is a trend that we see not just with LGBTQ fundraising, but with anything having to do with, like,
social justice,
identity-specific cultural groups, and that is a result of the current political climate. So we have an increasing need, and these groups are competing for the same resources or less resources. So there are difficult tensions here, you know? There are things that, like, we need this work to continue, and we also have to figure out ways to make it continue. But we have hopes, and we continue to truck along. That is what our community is known for. So one of our biggest hopes for the future is simply sustainability. We want to be able to maintain what we've built without constantly fearing what our funding and resources are going to look like in the next few months. And a big piece of that is growing our grassroots support. And we would love to see people become more invested in sustaining FQC in small and consistent ways. And that can look like signing up for monthly donations, even if it's like a $5, a $10, $25 donation, goes a long way and it adds up. Or hosting a birthday fundraiser in social media. That helps a lot. We've had volunteers organize bake sales. We've worked with local businesses and organizations and find ways to support, that they find ways to support their work in a way that aligns with their missions. And also when we have fundraising campaigns, like sharing that out and like reaching out to those networks. And these are smaller contributions, like that individually may not be like everything that we need to support this programming, but it goes a long way. For example, our Pride, all of our Pride programming is supported by community donations and sponsorships from local businesses. So it adds up, and we can make a really big impact with that support. And another major hope for us is just more concrete support from the city of Fairbanks. Cities, especially in the Pacific Northwest, which are kind of like our peer areas, like have played a significant and important role in supporting and sustaining community infrastructure. Like, for example, in Seattle, the city directly funds LGBTQ resources. And referral lines, especially to people who are housed in the Seattle LGBTQ Center through their human resources department or their human services department. They also, for example, operate a community grants program where people can apply and get funding for community-led projects. Another example of a peer city is Portland. We recognize that these are bigger cities, just things that we can aspire to, right? And they've gone even further. Like, they've been able to integrate LGBTQIA2+ equity into city government. They have its Office of Equity and Human Rights has dedicated support for dedicated program for LGBTQ support that participates in policy and budgeting process for the city. And the city has used municipal grants to support organizations that do LGBTQ resources support for the community. And there's also a lot of very vocal and verbal support of and acknowledgement of the need to support the queer community. So that's why we're here. We'd love to explore what a partnership like that with the city would look like. Even if it is a little bit of like financial support to get us started, that would be great. But also, we really look for meaningful partnerships. You know, we all care about the citizens of the city, and we want to make sure that our youth have the resources that they need. And, you know, we're not asking the city to be like our savior, but instead of a meaningful partner in providing these resources that not just the queer community benefits, but as a community, we all benefit when we're all lifting all boats. So in sum, more predictable support, stronger partnerships, diversified funding are the things that will help us fill these gaps and be able to support our community in a more sustainable way. Yeah. And some more of our dreams. Oh, is this you? Sorry. more of our dreams. We really what we want to see is increased resiliency. We want our community to feel safer. We want explicit non-discrimination protections for all Alaskans. We want queer housing support. A lot of our queer youth get they get kicked out of their houses when they come into their own identity, or as they're coming into their identity. So we also have a dream of expanding our youth programming to continue to support our youth. And yeah, overall, just a healthy, inclusive, welcoming Fairbanks. You know, even though our programming is designed to support the queer community, everybody is welcome so long as we can all be inclusive and supportive of each other. Let's see. Yeah, y'all should get involved. you know, there is. This is not something that we've achieved alone. You know, we really want to end by sharing something that's really tangible, or tangible ways that people can be really a part of building what we're building. Whether that's through volunteering, or financial support, or partnerships, or showing up, or you know, simply helping people connect with our work. You know, this can be a really good way to increase the support.
And we also have some big opportunities coming up this fall to come out. Come out, support FQC, and be in community with us. We have a voter engagement fun event coming up called Drag Out the Vote on August 22nd. But we'll have some like fun civic engagement opportunities. There'll be on-site voter registration and also a drag show, and it's completely free and it's super fun, but that will be in the Dena Commons. And then on October 4th, we're bringing up Alok. They have a comedy tour and they're coming up on October 4th, and it's really great. Bringing up like big names like Alok is really important, like not only for like LGBTQ folks, for all of us. Like it's good to have like arts and culture and everything, and have these different folks come and hear their perspective and their comedy. And yeah, and then on October 24th we have our annual fundraiser, the Lavender Gala, oh my gosh, with a masquerade theme this year, which is going to be really fun. Tickets are available right now if you want to like really be part of fundraising efforts there. These events are opportunities to support the organization, but they're also opportunities to be part of the work and support queer folks and your neighbors. And there's a lot of big things happening. There's also our programming that we do every week. And the easiest way to keep up with this is to follow us through social media. That's where we post our monthly calendars, upcoming events, volunteer opportunities, resources, and changes to the programming. And if you see something we're doing that resonates with you, share it. That's a really great way to support us as well. There's a lot of different ways to be involved. Sign up for volunteer opportunities. We have advisory board positions opening soon, within the next coming weeks. Show up to events. Follow us on social media if you haven't already. If you want to scan this code, it takes you to our link tree, and there's like sign up forms on there for different things. You could also access the mutual aid forms on our link tree as well. And then it also takes you to all of our different social media pages. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share about FQC and what our community has built, and some of what we hope to do next, and we're really grateful to have spaces like the Diversity Council where we can have these conversations and think about what supporting LGBTQ people in Fairbanks can look like collectively. And we'd love to hear any questions, comments, or ideas if you have any. Go ahead.
A couple.
Okay.
Why did the organization in Anchorage close?
When?
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Funding.
Yeah, mostly funding. So identity was one of the, if not the main, LGBTQ and gender-affirming medical clinics in Alaska. It also provided support for people in the Pacific Northwest. And they also had a community center. But due to funding and some leadership changes, they slowly started closing programming over the years. And they just did not become sustainable, and the board decided to dissolve. That was last year.
No, it was May.
May of this year was officially they closed everything.
Yeah. Second question is, have you looked at the licensee holders for the bingo? Not the bingo parlor themselves, because they're contractors, mm-hmm. but the license owners of the bingo places are the people to talk to. They're the nonprofits that have the license for that particular bingo hall.
Oh.
I would suggest contacting them. For example, Tudor Road Bingo in Anchorage has got a long list of nonprofits that are receiving, but they're receiving because a single license holder is distributing the funds.
That's a great suggestion. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, we'll definitely look into that.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate what you do. I, too, am very concerned about our youth, and I appreciate everything that you're doing to keep them safe. Do you get a lot of, are there safety concerns that we can help with, or the city, or anybody?
I definitely think so. The city, a lot of the times when we think about addressing safety concerns, we think about de-escalation of issues that are happening, like violence and things like that. But mm-hmm. A lot of the times, it's difficult for the city to do something explicitly for that. However, when we focus on those preventative factors, whether that is increasing support so that we can create this resilience in our community ahead of time, that alone is also violence prevention and suicide prevention. And that's where we see where the city can really partner with us, whether that is through sponsorship of spaces. We've had some sponsorships and partnership with, like, the borough, for example, where they waive fees for us, which makes our programming more accessible. Mm-hmm. For, like, spaces in Alaska Land, for example. Mm-hmm. And we also don't know explicitly what the city can do, so mm-hmm. we're hoping to start those conversations about, like, what feels doable for the city to help us continue to do this work. We don't want to impose. We have some ideas of what we need, but we also mm-hmm. are, we've had to be flexible and resilient and adaptable, not just in our, just what it means to be queer. That's what it means to be queer. That's what it means to be a person of color or any of these things as well. And our programming reflects that. So we'd love to hear ideas too. And we want this to be a co-creation mm-hmm. process.
Yeah. You know, for safety, I just want to say really quick, mm-hmm. you know, a few years ago, we did have a non-discrimination ordinance pass here at the, like, city council, and then it got vetoed by the mayor at the time, and then it was supposed to be put on the ballot, but it never was. And there's other mm-hmm. cities in Alaska that have non-discrimination ordinances, so that does give protection. Mm-hmm. All that does is really update the language to include LGBTQ people explicitly so that we are protected like everyone else, just mm-hmm. like everyone else. Mm-hmm. Very, very easy. And that's a really simple, tangible way to mm-hmm. do it, to help increased safety. Mm-hmm. That way, if something does happen, and things do happen, we see that all the time. A lot of the people that come to our mutual aid events or ask for mutual aid support are actively being discriminated against. We actually know of an entire family that was just evicted this, like, just a few days ago. And there's nothing they can really, there's no, like, specific protections. It's a family of trans folks. And they can't say, I'm being discriminated against because I'm trans, because that is not included in the language. Mm-hmm. So just updating the language to make sure it's up to date to the most modern terms so that we are protected is a very great, great thing that the city can do for us.
If I can pull it. If you could provide language for that, that would be great.
Yeah, we could look at, like, Anchorage has one, and I think Ketchikan? Sitka?
Okay.
There's a couple, we got a couple cities here that already have one. They just poop past it.
Okay. I have a few more questions, but also maybe some suggestions. First of all, what does a partnership look like? That'd be one. But also suggestions on are you part of the PFD Click and Give?
No. So we are, I do want to mention, we are fiscally sponsored by Native Movement. Mm-hmm. So we are technically, legally, like a program of theirs in the most basic sense. Mm-hmm. We share their nonprofit status. So if we were to be on that, it would be Native Movement that's on that.
It does provide some limitations. There's some benefits, but some limitations, especially if there are other groups that are fiscally sponsored by Native Movement that are also wanting to be on the Pick, Click, and Give.
Right.
They have to be giving it to Native Movement with the purpose of that. So.
Of dispersing it equally. So, yeah.
Well, probably disclaimer, I'm an employee of Native Movement. But didn't know that. just what would a partnership look like? And let me see. And you said how we can help. So,
so many different ways to be a partner. You know, Joe gave some really good examples of what other cities are doing in the lower 48. And the big thing is just, like, include us. Honestly, include us in different ways that there's so many different ways, especially when we're impacted by so many things disproportionately. Making sure that our voices are heard and we're not an afterthought when it comes to different things, housing, policy, you know, there's so many different ways to have a partnership. And then if the city can swing it, you know, funding would be really great and would especially help, you know, with our sustainability. Mm-hmm. And I do think, like, it is, you know, a city and a state's responsibility to make sure that people are taking care. Those are great questions. Yeah. Any more? Come on. We're ready.
You mentioned, like, the need for better mental health services. I mean, that's kind of across the board for everyone, but it is disproportional.
Yeah.
That really does affect LGBTQ. I'm Rachel. I'm an educator, also a musician. So I'm kind of here representing both those things. You have this list of, like, yes, here are needs, here are things we've done to address those needs. I feel like one of the most difficult things that we face in this state is especially teen access to mental health services. Have you seen models of, like, how other places have been able to improve that at all? Hmm. I mean, it's a hard problem.
Yeah, it definitely is a hard problem.
As far as, like, a lot for better or for worse, a lot of resource sharing and resource navigation in this way falls into nonprofits and groups and community support groups. So cities or states or counties, like, generally have partnered with these nonprofits by providing funding and delegating these resources so that these people who are trained and are
connected to those communities have, are able to provide those support. So explicit partnerships, which sometimes feel like, and even though these shouldn't be, sometimes feel like political moves or political things are not. We're just providing support to our community. Some places have gone, like moved past that and are able to just be very intentionally committed to be like, hey, it doesn't matter that, you know, we're here to support the people. And a lot of that, a lot of that looks like financial support.
Something that we were exploring with some local counselors and therapists was looking at like small grants. So, you know, we get them paid, but they also offer like services for free to, you know, 20 people, you know, in the very least. And if that can prevent one suicide, then I'm happy. But yeah, little opportunities like that, even if it's not like huge, just having opportunities where people can access it for minimal barrier would be great. Free or just, you know, reduced or something, and finding ways to like make sure professionals are paid while also making sure people get their needs met.
I feel like a lot of what you do is mental health care to a certain extent. Yeah. I mean, when you feel safe and you belong and you have support in your difficult times, that's really helpful. To what extent do you think, like, our school counselors are aware of your organization and what it does as a resource?
I'm not sure where they are. We gave a presentation to the school district at some point. We try to get information out there. It's actually kind of difficult to get in there. It is. It was a little bit easier a couple of years ago when we first started and we were first starting to do stuff, but now that we're more like established, we're like, where is everyone? So
why is it harder
to make those connections?
I think because of the political climate, something that isn't inherently political feels like it is. Supporting groups like us feels like you're taking a stance. Over the past few years, especially in the school district, this has been a topic of conversation of LGBTQ inclusivity, or not.
Especially like representation in school and also sex education. That's been a huge debated topic.
Yeah.
And I think people just don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
So I think it's just people are just choosing to the distance because it's easy.
I mean, it seems like our counselors have like resource lists. Like, it's like there are a lot of issues that our kids have that you know, maybe they can't solve at school, but they can refer them to someone, to something.
Right.
Like that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they know who you are?
Yeah, like we used to have meetings with Luke.
Okay.
Like, we've had several meetings with Luke. We had, like, a list of ways to help LGBTQ students based on, like, the feedback that, like, our youth gave them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially the dead naming in schools.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big one. And we found out that, especially, like, when there's substitutes, the name lists for the day are, like, printed off and you can't choose like an alternative
name. Yeah, the preferred name is not on the sub list.
Yeah, the preferred name is
not
on the sub list.
Yeah. It's
not there. So subs often will
dead
name people.
They don't know that there's anything else.
Right.
We're working on it.
Yeah, I know. I know, because we were talking.
Yeah,
and Luke was like, yeah, we could totally change the system. But yeah, it's just been a long time coming. So, yeah.
Hey, any other questions?
Or comments?
Or comments, yeah. Okay, thank you guys for coming today and sharing. My suggestion would be to attend city council meetings and, you know, write yourself in so that you can speak at their meetings and kind of, you know, voice like what you're doing. Make sure they have a clear understanding of, you know, your needs and your expectations of what you expect from the city. So I would definitely get on their agenda if I were you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we are on to report from the chair. So at our last meeting, I know we had, go ahead.
We have two visitors. I'm wondering if they wanted to speak. Oh, I see. Okay. No problem.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so for our report from the chair, we have new members, and so we wanted to do brief introductions so everyone can know who each other, who we are. So we'll start, well, I guess I'll start, and then we can just go around the room. How about that? So I am Karen Blackburn. Oh, you're fine. It's just bright, super bright. It's okay. So I'm Karen Blackburn. I've been a member of this community for over 20 years. I'm originally from Monroe, Louisiana. I'm rooted in Fairbanks. Father-in-law is a pastor. Husband's been working at the school district for over 25 years. I am the executive director for Northern Hope Center. I have three beautiful kiddos. My son is playing for Lathrop football. So if you guys are coming to the Mayor's Bowl, I'll see you there because I'll be in concessions. But just longtime community member. And I joined the Diversity Council as a request from the previous mayor. He met me at one of the Go Red for Women events, and he personally asked me to join, and we sat down, we had a meeting. He felt like I could bring something to the council, and so that's why I'm here.
I'm Mary Jo Skaggs. I came to Alaska at the age of 4 as an immigrant with my mother, and since then I have immigrated from the Philippines, and since then have helped other family members, about 20 over the years, find their citizenship pathways in Alaska, including, you know, housing, getting resources. And one of the organizations that established in my youth was the Filipino American Society of Fairbanks, which I'm now the president of. So it has been a full circle moment for me to be able to lead that group, especially in today's climate, when immigration is a hot topic. And what we're looking to do is creating, again, those welcoming spaces in our community for newcomers, whether they are from the Philippines or from other countries. This weekend, we will be hosting a international teachers welcome party, partnering with the Fairbanks Education Association to provide some resources for newcomers as they come to Fairbanks. Ride shares, you know, they aren't able to get their driver's licenses at least for a while, finding housing, even temporary housing, finding small appliances and household goods, winter gear. So those are things that we are rallying our community to find ways to be able to support them, but also extend that again to other newcomers to the state. So really, really having some great conversations with both FEA and NEA, because it's a need not just in Fairbanks, but across the state. So trying to start building out those resource lists, even things like cell phones, you know, being able to find a provider that a trusted provider that they can speak to, that they feel comfortable speaking with, because it can be daunting to go into a new corporate office to be able to get a service such as cell phones, and being able to come at it with a perspective of, you know, English as a second language, or just, again, navigating these new systems. So these identifying these new challenges and just finding ways to be able to support that and fill that need. Filipino American Society of Fairbanks has been ramping up to provide those services, all, you know, volunteer-based as a nonprofit, but very proud to be part of that. And it was through that work that, you know, got connected with Mayor Mindy O'Neill, and bringing those perspectives to the Diversity Council and learning from others so that I can bring that also back to our community. And just for being able to share the resources that the city has. Again, it's, not knowing what's available or being able to navigate, how to go through, again, systems, legal systems, how to get enrolled into schools. It's just so many items that are like, okay, we have to prioritize and be able to address what we can as we can with the capacity that we have. So I find that's a common theme between many organizations that do this this kind of work. So learning a lot from the Diversity Council, as I'm also hoping to provide.
Well, I'm Lainey. I feel like those are a couple hard acts to follow. But I semi-recently, at the end of winter, finished out my college education. I am an accountant in town. I came up to Alaska for college and chose to stay. And I am, pursuing my professional career and settling into what feels like my adulthood, and community is something that does matter to me. And essentially an old teacher of mine was like, I think that you should be a member of this council, and I'm hoping to be involved, make a difference, be a part of that here. So, yeah.
I'm just learning how all this stuff works. Hi, I'm Rachel DeTemple. This is my first meeting on the Diversity Council. I'm here because a lot of musicians get together every January or February. Well, I say every, it's happened twice, to just talk about musical infrastructure in Fairbanks and kind of where we are, what we can build. Because, it may seem like music is sort of frivolous and entertainment, but it is the way that a community shows itself to be a community, and it's a way that a community perpetuates itself as a community. And so we had a lot of conversations about that, and so the idea was floated that maybe there should be a musician on the Diversity Council to talk about things like the importance of all ages venues, so that you don't have to, so that you don't have to be in a bar to play a gig. So that our younger musicians can have access to that, and so that we can be more inclusive in our musical environment. And what can we do to encourage some venues downtown to start hosting music? Because there are a lot of barriers to that. They just know how. We have a lot of places that could host music that don't, because they don't know how to monetize it. They don't really know how. Because it's not, there's sound equipment and stuff. It's a little intimidating. But, also I am an educator, too, so I have a hard time taking that hat off, as you saw. It's all about building community one way or another, whether it's musically or educationally. And I also just really enjoy these kinds of processes. There are people besides educators who are actively building the community in which we live, and it's really nice to unite forces over that.
Fun? Yes. Okay. Thank you. Dorothy Shockley. I am, first of all, Upper Koyukon Athabascan from the interior, or Diné. My family comes from the Yukon River villages of Tanana. That's where my mother was born. And my father in Rampart, Alaska. And his mother was born between Rampart and Stevens Village on the Ray River. And my mother's family was more on the Kostjaket area, which is a community that's no longer there, but lots of roots in Alaska. And I've been on the Diversity Council for 4 years, maybe 5 years. But I have always been interested in this council. I attended probably one of their first meetings years ago when it was formed, primarily because of the Fairbanks Four. Well, that was one of the issues. But, I'm glad that we're doing this. I don't know where some of our new members, and it's always good to introduce ourselves and learn where they're from and their interests and what they do. So I have been involved in politics, civic engagement for probably all my life, and served as a legislative aide for the late Senator Kukash for 8 sessions and worked for Representative Peltola for a bit, but that's my passion, I guess, is civic engagement and getting people involved. Our youth are so important, and we really need to, I think, be more active in making sure that our youth are safe and proud of who they are, no matter, you know, what. It's just really important. So I'd like for us to do more on that in that area as well. Thank you.
All right, well, hi everyone. My name is Melissa Clinton. I am a community organizer. I'm a political researcher, artist, musician. Family got stationed here, I'm going to say 2001. That was in the military, ever since. So I do a lot in the community. I've worked on elections, campaigns, mutual aid efforts. I was on the School District Diversity Council and co-authored the heavily contentious LGBTQ Pride, which everybody talks about every year. It's still there, because I know how to write things. So, you know, sometimes I might sneak in, it's still there. Cool. I helped draft a couple of pieces of legislation. I do other fun things in the community. I also am founder of BAM, Black Alaskan Art Matters, which specifically helps Black creatives in Alaska with exhibitions and resources and education. So just finding ways to highlight Black creatives in an industry and a profession that often forgets that they exist or tokenizes them. So I'm kind of all over the place. I joined the council because I had a conversation with Minnie. She was looking for other folks to join. I had previous experience doing things like this. So I would say that I'm pretty impact-oriented and very community-oriented. So I like to, you know, talk about something, get it done, make sure it's impactful. So that's kind of the mindset that I'm coming in of, I don't want to just, you know, sit around and talk. I want to actually make sure the things that we're talking about does something, and does something real and meaningful and warranted in the community. So if that's what we're here to do, then glad I'm here. Thanks.
I'm Herb Butler, and you can read about me in the bio in the handout. I was going to write a much longer bio. I decided against it. I would suggest, though, reading my book. I'm an author of a book. It's in Amazon eBooks, titled Assimilation Trail, and it tells the story of how I was taken away and brainwashed, and how I returned. in the middle of part of the book, it details nearly 5 years as an activist soldier in the American Indian Movement in the lower 48, working with a very long list of tribes and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other Native American activists in that period of time. And we're the ones that stopped the termination plan in the U.S. legislature to terminate Indian tribes. We're the ones that stopped that dead in its tracks and shut it down. And there are many, many tribes in Lower 48, including up here in Alaska, that enjoyed results because of the movement we started 55 years ago. Here in Alaska, for example, we've brought ourselves to a very high level of lifestyle in the Native community, beginning with the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and the creation of 12 corporations, and now with our health system, we've become what I would consider successful. This is my second time in this council. I was driven away by three mayors ago, but I returned. And also, I've been on another diversity council, but this was for the company I retired with, Williams Companies, and that was a different sort of a diversity council, to where we focused 100% of our attention on corporate and company issues, trying to maintain a single business model throughout the whole nation of Lower 48, and a very successful diversity council, in fact. But I'm happy to be here for a good list of reasons, and primarily to act as more of a surveillance role on the community here, to ensure that those of us that need the attention and help actually get it. And unfortunately, when I say those of us, actually what it means is we are of a minority in the community. But there is one thing that I want to bring up here that I feel is most important, having been a veteran myself. The two bases, Eielson and Fort Wainwright, house thousands of transient people. And for example, in the Army, I know that they're assigned for a three-year term, yes, but they're still transient. And I think that's important in this council to focus on. And I made note of it in the diversity action plan notes that we do so. So that's it.
Thank you all for your introductions and telling us a little bit more about yourselves, so that everyone can kind of feel like we're quote unquote family here, okay? And so for the next two items, we have the unfinished business, which is the review of the diversity action plan. And then the new business is discussion on activities and duties. I feel that we should table those to the next meeting because Mayor O'Neill is not here. And I know she really wanted to be a part of these conversations. Okay. All right. And so the next thing would be our calendar of events. Do we have a calendar of events?
We We sure do, and I forgot to put it in the packet. Oh. Just right when you said that is when it dawned on me. Let me see if I can pull it up right here just so everybody can see it. It's. I really am sorry about that.
I know one event is coming up, and I don't know if it's on our calendar. It's like the stand down. Or, yeah, I think that's what it's
called. I hope I have that on the calendar. Let's see. I did not have it on there.
Yeah, I think it's Saturday, too.
You're right, because I'm going to represent elections at that event. So, yeah. 3 days from now. Mm-hmm. What is today?
Today is Tuesday.
Is it the 15th?
Yeah.
I think it is. Oh, I could look at what day Saturday is on there. Does anyone else know of any events that we should add on here? Goblin? While we're thinking about that, maybe we should add I'll go back and add the November state election day, and then most importantly is October 6th local election day. Just saying.
So you'll send that out too?
Yes, okay. I will send out an updated copy.
Thank you
for pointing it out.
Okay, so now we are to member comments. Does anyone have any comments?
Yeah, I have two. The vote happened so fast I wasn't able to say anything. So I guess if we're tabling, talking about the action plan, what do we do in the meantime? Because now we have 2 months and a lot to discuss and some things that it looks like can be done. So I'm just wondering, you know, what can we do? Because that's a lot of time to kind of sit on it, you know what I mean? And then my second comment was, I mean, I know you, but I'm not sure if everybody knows, like, our two staff. So I was wondering if y'all wanted to do introductions, too.
Jake always wants to do an introduction.
I definitely can. I'm Jake. I'm the HR director for the city, and so my role on the council is assigned to my role with the city. When the mayor kicks me out, I will be kicked out on all the ways. But what I enjoy about this group is the conversations that take place. I've lived in Fairbanks now for longer than I can remember. We were military as well. My parents PCS'd the day after I graduated high school, and I decided to stay like a crazy person and start my life on my own the day after graduation. But no, it's been wonderful. I've lived in the South. I've lived in the Midwest. I've lived here. We spent a little bit of time overseas, and so I have seen a lot of different things. I've been in a lot of different places. I really enjoy the pieces that this group brings and the thoughts that your conversations evoke sometimes. And so I enjoy being a part of this. I recognize that this is year three. Sounds right. Year three.
For you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, it's a little weird to be a non-voting member, because we're separate from the rest of it. But what's cool about that is I get to experience, in my opinion, the best part of the whole thing. And it's, answer questions, give guidance, as you guys work on the diversity action plan, there's pieces that it was more important that this role was here for when the action plan was different. And so that's cool too. But I'm here to speak for the employees and answer questions that you guys may have about the structure as far as the city itself is. And so I appreciate the question, and I always appreciate the opportunity to speak. You do know me. But yeah, that's a little bit about me.
I'm Danny. If you don't know me, you'll get to know me because I'm at every single meeting, and I'm the one that communicates with you via email usually. I've been in Fairbanks for 34 years, I think. I have 3 grown daughters and 2 beautiful little grandbabies. I've worked here at the city for 17 years. I love my job. I love boards and commissions at the city. And I really, I love the potential that this group has. It's been around since 2014, and I think it has so much unrealized potential. And it's good to see, like, the momentum of the group, the particular group that we have right now. I think there's exponential potential, I'll say that. Sounds like a little poem title. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy to be here, and I'm not a member. I'm not a member at all, but I'm your resource. I'm your administrative support.
Thank you, Alyssa, for bringing that to my attention and including Jake and Danny. Go ahead.
Just a couple of things. Not really diversity council stuff, but I am a member of the Community Advisory Council for the Alaska LNG Pipeline Project. And if anybody wants to talk to me about that, I can bring you up to date. And also want to let you know, too, that I'm authoring book number 2. And I've just begun, and it's a very, very interesting concept. It pertains to artificial intelligence. In fact, Microsoft's co-pilot just agreed to co-author with me. And we communicate nearly every day, and I just spent the whole afternoon today, for example, still working on an outline and prologue, and we've been discussing components of that and how to devise a book for the layman to read on what AI, artificial intelligence, really is.
Thank you. So back to what you were stating, Alyssa, about it being so much time. I think that, so from looking at the member notes, I see only 2 members have sent over notes to Danny on this. So it gives us other members more time to go through it and then also send those notes. And I did see in the email your questions that you sent over. And also, I think it gives us all about the activities and the duties. I think that gives us all time to look at your questions and then also to formulate our own questions. And then we can come back to the table with some answers to, you know, some of those questions and some solutions. So that way we can have a really open and a genuine, an in-depth conversation when Mayor O'Neill is present. Is everyone in agreement? Yeah. And then also we need to take it home, mark it up. We also need to send over our bios too for Danny because, yeah, I didn't get that memo either. So. I didn't get that one. But I've been super busy, so much other stuff. So any other member comments?
So with the looking at the community education and public learning piece, I had mentioned this couple meetings ago, the Filipino American Society of Fairbanks was awarded a social justice grant, and we are hosting on October 2nd and 3rd a leadership convening with our Filipino leaders in Alaska, but we are also extending that on Saturday morning to have possibly a public forum or an education piece where we would invite the larger community, the greater community, to come in and be able to hear some of the Filipino perspectives, hopefully having some outcomes or some good discussions the day before and being able to share that again with the broader community. And so just planting those dates and inviting the Diversity Council to come be part of that. It is a public event, but I'm taking some of the things that I'm hearing here as well to incorporate. It's only a few hour session, so I'm trying to make sure it's impactful and that it's addressing the most pressing concerns of our community. But I think it's a great forum to be able to have that. And then that day we do have a Filipino cultural celebration in the afternoon, and we do have tabling opportunities. So that, I don't know if I think we had talked about it before, about having the Diversity Council be present at some events. Mm-hmm. That is certainly an opportunity we have at this event, but also just keeping in mind, like, we were kind of trying to figure out if there were those and what that would look like. I see Alyssa's comment here about, like, the one-pagers and the business cards. But so, like, we can't really table if we don't have any of those items. But that is October 2nd and 3rd, so we've got one meeting between them. And I'm not sure how to put a more, I guess, I don't know if I need to, like, put together a proposal for the Fairbanks Diversity Council to be a part of that, or how that would be presented.
Our next meeting date is not till October 13th.
Well, okay.
Because we're now meeting every other month.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe you should just put some thoughts together in an email to the mayor and CC me, and I will take the lead from whatever the mayor would like to do.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Jenny. Yep.
Any other comments? Okay, so our next meeting date is October 13th. Please, when you get that email, let Danny know if you'll be present or not. And if nothing else, we're going to adjourn this meeting with 1 minute to spare.